Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, and at the controls is our horticulture expert, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
We're also joined by our good friend, the Patch Adams of all of our hearts, soon to be Dr. Garrett Britton.
Thanks for having me.
Well, on Friday, gentlemen, the Pirates downed the Astros 5-4 on the strength of Jimmy Paradis and Jake Elmore. Astros manager Bo Porter said that this is Major League Baseball, and you can't have those kinds of fundamental mishaps in big league games. If you're not sure about what Bo Porter's talking about, he's talking about Jimmy Paradis and Jake Elmore's total lack of communication, I guess you could call it. They just collided in the outfield on what should have been the third out, which ended up leading to the winning run.
Did you notice that the Pirates like felt hesitant to celebrate?
Yeah, they were like, they were all kind of looking around like, is this okay? Are we allowed to celebrate this?
Maybe we shouldn't celebrate when we win on a pop-up that should have ended the game and two guys ran into one another.
Here's what my grandpa said. I was watching the game with my grandpa. He's, you know, been a longtime Pirates fan his whole life. He's been cheering for the Pirates.
He goes,
that's an awful way to win a baseball game. That's horrible. I feel bad for those Astros. That's
true, but count all the same.
Is it really? Right.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing that shocked me the most about it was later on, Bo Porter was talking about the communication between Jimmy Paradis, who was the outfielder, and Jake Elmore, who was the second baseman. By the way, I follow baseball, and these names are unfamiliar to me. Like, I'm like, oh, Jimmy Paradis and Jake Elmore. Okay.
Well, the Astros, I mean,
that's their whole team.
Their highest paid player, is $3 million.
Yeah, Bud Norris, is that who their highest paid is?
Yeah, Bud Norris. I mean, we're talking, the Indians signed Casey Kochman for $3 million last year off the scrap heap.
Whew. Yeah, if that doesn't lend some perspective to the Houston Astros.
Obviously, they have some better players than Casey Kochman. You know, they have Altuve, and I would say Justin Maxwell is better, but they're on, you know, arbitration years or whatever. So, but their payroll is so minuscule, like they have no one.
Well, listening to Bo Porter talk, though, I guess what really struck me was he said that because Elmore was waving Paradis off, that Paradis should have just peeled off and let Elmore catch the ball. He said that was the big communication error. Now, I understand if your second baseman's calling for the ball and he's got it, but this wasn't like a shallow fly ball. I mean, it was one where they were both running to it. It took Elmore a second to get himself set underneath it, and Paradis would have had a really easy catch on his own. So to me, that, I guess when I look at it as a fan of baseball and as a student of the game and as, you know, someone who's played it and read about it and watched it, to me, that's Paradis' ball. As long as he's calling for it. If he's calling for that ball, the outfielder should have the priority over the infielder, in my mind.
Right. I mean, I played a lot of second base in my life, and, you know, yes, that's a much easier play for the outfielder to make. To me, it's really about, like, and this is tough on a club with so many young guys who don't know one another, but
yeah,
it's all about knowing the guys around you, you know? Like, because this is the same outfielder who ran into Jose Altuve a few weeks ago. Same guy. So obviously he's got a lot of speed. He can cover a lot of ground because he's getting to these shallow pop-ups over second base. So if I'm a second baseman for the Astros, either one, I'm going to tell him, listen, I can get to those balls. Play a few steps deeper. Or if you're going to get to those balls, I'm going to change my positioning, or I need to know in my head that after five or six steps into the grass, you're going to be there because you can get to that ball.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it's funny that you should bring up Altuve, because he came off the bereavement list on Saturday, and immediately, it was in the first or second inning, one of those early innings in the game, there was another shallow pop-up to right, and Altuve is waving his arms like he's trying to just fly away. He's just trying to flap those arms like crazy.
He's the one to get decked in the mouth again.
Yeah, I guess so. They've whatever that communication error was.
He's trying to make it very clear. I have the ball.
maybe they don't speak the same language, but I feel like when your arms are flailing through the air like that, he's sending a pretty clear message that way.
Right. Well, and again, so that is in he may have looked ridiculous, but in Altuve's defense, at that point, if I'm the right fielder, you need to peel off. Everybody in the stadium is aware that Jose Altuve is saying he's got it. If he doesn't get it, it's his problem.
Right. Yeah.
Obviously, so, the Astros have a few things they need to work out.
Yeah, they got some stuff to iron out. They, you know, that gives them something to work on before games and whatnot. That's good. Yeah. You know, you don't want everything to be too easy if you're Bo Porter.
Bo Porter might want to try to hit some flares over the second baseman's head before the game the next night.
Yeah,
Those
Astros, they are terrible. And even and I guess we'll kind of touch on that. Even as terrible as they are, they played Pittsburgh tough this weekend. Or either that or Pittsburgh just kind of played down to them.
Well, but, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, the games the Indians had with them, there were, I think, one blowout game where they almost won by 20 runs, but there were some tough ones in there, though, you know, and it's hard to say against teams like that. Are you playing down or are they just still fighting? I mean, do you think the Astros are going to lose 100 games?
I would not be shocked if they didn't.
Yeah, me either.
They are pretty awful.
They're pretty bad. And I wouldn't be surprised if at some point they trade either Lucas Harrell or Bud Norris.
I think Bud Norris will be a definite casualty.
Not that Bud Norris is doing anything to increase his trade value.
No, certainly not. Certainly not. That's for sure. Yeah. Well, let's move on to our agenda for today. Today we're going to have our injury updates with Dr. Garrett. We'll talk about what's happening with the Pirates and their affiliates and then touch on the Cleveland Indians. We'll talk a little bit about the Seawolves and what's happening with the Wolves. And we'll finish up with our tweet mails. Still going with tweet mails. No Bob here to rain on that parade.
Yeah, we're going full force now. Bob's not here to tamp that enthusiasm.
We're all in on the tweet mails now.
That's right.
So let's kick it off with Dr. Garrett and what's going on with our injury updates.
Is there a doctor in the house?
I'm not a doctor yet, but I play one on the internet.
All right, well, we're going to mix it up a little bit this week. We're going to start with Pittsburgh, where the big news, Andrew McCutchen, scratched from Sunday's lineup.
Oh, let me tell you something. For the podcast, Andy was on Skype. As you can tell, he's Skyping it this week. Just as Dr. Garrett read that breaking news, his Skype call cut out.
Andy just flatlined.
He went into panic mode, I think.
That was my heart stopping as well as the Skype.
I wasn't sure if you were trying to spin the world in reverse to help relieve whatever caused the pain.
That was it, a la Superman style. Bring him back to life.
And that's the mystery, what caused this knee pain. It's his right knee. There was no clear injury. And we're not quite sure how long he's going to be out. It's doubtful that he'll be in tomorrow's game. There hasn't been any sort of medical update yet on it. We're waiting to hear. So we're going to watch out closely.
And as a Pirates fan, I guess I wasn't super concerned because it sounded like, and I just caught the beginning of the pregame, but it sounded like it was just some general discomfort during batting practice that he had. You know, they said they took him immediately to a doctor and they confirmed that there was nothing structural that was wrong. So, I mean, to me, it just kind of sounded like something where we just need to give you some time off, get your knee so it's feeling comfortable again, and we'll get you back on track. So I guess right now, I'm not freaked out. I understand if McCutchen's healthy, he's going to be playing, you know, 150-plus games a season. So, you know, if he's going to get some time to rest now, as long as he's healthy the rest of the way, I'm not really too worried about it.
Yeah, I'm sure he got the million-dollar workup, and I imagine that their threshold for setting him out is pretty low.
I would hope so. As a Grady Sizemore survivor.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I'm sure hopefully it's nothing catastrophic, but we're definitely going to be following
that. Think positive over there, huh? Quit being such a jerk and trying to rain on my parade.
Hey, man. I've seen it happen. It's not pretty.
Other than that, things are pretty quiet this week. We have Charlie Morton, who is scheduled to make 3 more rehab starts before returning. He's looking pretty good. He threw 61 pitches over 4 innings and seems to be doing okay. They're expecting a June return for Charlie Morton. Chase D began his rehab assignment Thursday down in Bradenton. He is recovering from that ligament in his left thumb he had to have some surgery on.
Yeah.
They're thinking a June return for him as well.
Oh, are they? They've set a date for that?
Yeah.
Or a tentative date?
Well, kind of a, yeah, timetable.
June's right around the corner.
June's coming up on us, so.
Yeah, that's not bad.
We'll see how he does. John McDonald, placed on the 15-day DL with low back sprain and elbow discomfort.
This is a multitude of problems.
Now, this may be related to him being 38.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say.
We call that old man disease.
Yeah.
Low back pain.
Too many ground balls.
I was having this discussion earlier with someone else. Low back pain really isn't that common. And you would think it would be more common in baseball. You know, there are a lot of forces acting, swinging the bat, you know, collisions, sliding. But these are professional athletes.
Right.
You know, they're training, they're working out. So this is probably something chronic. I doubt that it's anything major. Another point I wanted to touch on was he went hitless in the last six games.
Huh.
So, what came first is the question.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's the old chicken and the egg question.
Jeff Karstens.
It's like with James McDonald.
Exactly. That's right.
Yep.
Speaking of James McDonald, he's going to throw a bullpen session Tuesday, and he's recovering from this strange shoulder inflammation. He had a workup. MRI didn't show any structural damage, just some inflammation in the joint itself. They're not really expecting any complications from that.
Jeff, I believe the medical diagnosis for James McDonald was home run itis. That was what he was suffering from.
Yeah, something like that.
I like that. Jeff Karstens is keeping on his rehab assignment. He's recovering from right shoulder inflammation. Threw 65 pitches over four innings, looking good. 15-day DL. They really haven't set a date for his return.
Man, Jeff Karstens has not thrown a pitch yet this year.
Let me tell you, his injuries have been really weird because you like see him in the dugout during games, so you would hear a little bit about Jeff Karstens and how, oh yeah, we're getting Jeff Karstens back on track, but he's like he never really was doing anything. He was just hanging out with the team kind of, and you never really hear much about him. So
that shoulder inflammation, man, that's not good. And I'll get to that in one of my injuries for a minor league guy here.
Yeah, but I guess the fact that he's doing something now, that's good.
That's good, right, but it's taken. I mean, he came down with that in spring training.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was before the season even started.
Right.
So, you know, in yeah, there's not a whole lot to say about that. I'm sure they're working with him, you know, and they just don't want him to return too soon.
Yeah.
So
any other major news for the Pirates?
No, that's it for Pittsburgh. Other than McCutchen, things are okay.
Yeah.
Over to Cleveland, the name of the game is recovery.
Yeah, we're getting all right.
Blake Wood.
Getting healthy.
Threw a scoreless rehab inning Wednesday. He's recovering from a Tommy John about a year ago. And they're thinking June for his return.
Right. Well, they have 30 days from the date he was put out on rehab assignment. So I think it's like June 15th or 16th or something like that.
Yeah.
He has to either, you know, come off that rehab assignment or be optioned to a minor league club.
Right.
And I think he has options. I'm pretty sure.
Lou Marson, trying to bounce back from this right shoulder soreness.
You better hurry up because Yan Gomes is making it. Making it tough for old Blue Lou to get back in this lineup.
He began throwing last weekend, and everything seems to be stable. He seems to be doing all right. He remains on 15-day DL.
He's kind of like reached a plateau almost. Like, you don't hear anything.
Right.
Like, his return to throwing program started like at the first week of May.
Yeah.
And now it's almost the end of May, and nobody's really – it's an interesting
– And they actually said his return to late May, mid to late May. Well,
we're getting there.
It's the 18th, yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see. You know, they may decide not to We'll see.
It's going to be interesting.
We'll see.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Marson when he's healthy.
And last up, we have Brett Myers.
Yep.
Who was sidelined with this sore right elbow. They did a MRI that showed a mild UCL sprain. And we always associate UCL with Tommy John. And tendonitis. He had his first rehab outing on Saturday, which reportedly went well.
3 innings, no runs, and a very, very low pitch count.
His next rehab start will be Tuesday, and they will not make a decision until Tuesday about activation.
Tuesday he's supposed to throw 75 pitches, no matter how many innings, no matter how badly that goes. 75 pitches.
75 is the number.
So, he can stay out on rehab until June 16th. So maybe that's what I was thinking with Blake Wood. But it seems that they both kind of went on rehab at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I think but Brett Myers definitely could stay out till June 16th. He's in double A. So if he gets another start, Akron will be in Erie this weekend. And I'm going to go to at least one of those, planning on if some things don't fall apart. So if he's still there, I might see him if he gets a third rehab start.
Sounds good. Well, that wraps it up for the medical segment.
Well, I tell you what, these medical segments, they really haven't been that bad the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
Cleveland started off pretty rough. They've really picked it up lately as far as keeping their players healthy.
Yeah, you know, Vinny Pesano, he came off the DL Friday and pitched a scoreless inning. And he claims that he's going to change his throwing routine to try to combat that elbow soreness. Apparently, he does not throw between appearances.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, he said even if it's 3 or 4 days, he does not throw off a mound. So he's going to try to throw in between and see if that doesn't build up some more strength in the elbow, I guess.
Yeah.
The one bad thing from the minor leagues for the Indians is Danny Salazar, a starting pitcher who was recently promoted to AAA Columbus, was scratched from a start on Saturday with right shoulder soreness. So obviously, you know, we haven't heard anything more, but that never inspires a lot of confidence.
It claims another victim.
Yeah, based on the Jeff Carstens discussion. Not very enthusiastic about that news.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, we'll definitely keep our eyes on that. For now, let's move on to Pittsburgh and what's going on with the Pirates. We're going to start off with the Pirates. Since we've last spoken, the Pirates started a series against the Brewers, who have traditionally just owned the Pirates. Since 2007, I want to say the Pirates have maybe, was it 8 victories, 9 victories against the Brewers. And it's they typically play us very well at Miller Park. Specifically,
they were reading the franchise record against the Brewers the other day on MLB Network, and it was just absurd. It was like 63 and I don't know. It was bad. It was almost a 6-to-1 ratio.
Jeez,
it was bad. Maybe obviously that's not the lifetime, but you know, within the last whatever years, but it was really pretty astounding.
Yeah. And when you look at their splits at Miller Park specifically, the Brewers just they dominate the Pirates. But Andrew McCutchen on Tuesday hit a walk-off homer to beat the Brewers. It was a great victory in 12 innings. It was kind of, as a Pirates fan, because you're so inundated with everything about how the Brewers play the Pirates so tough and how the Pirates are constantly losing to the Brewers, it was finally nice to see us seemingly kind of get over that hump as a fan. You know, it's tough as a fan to sit there and watch it when you know how Ryan Braun's going to hit a grand slam here and put him up by 6, and then that's going to be the end of the game, and we're going to lose this one too. You know, for us to kind of fight and scratch and keep ourselves in that game, and then to have our marquee player hit that home run to help us win it, that was kind of a big morale booster, I guess, for me as a fan. It was nice to see. You know, hey, these guys can't overcome this, you know.
At least once.
Right.
The curse isn't so strong.
Right. You know, and they played the Brewers really tough in that series. So that was kind of nice to see. We touched on this already a little bit, but John McDonald was put on the DL with a multitude of ailments, the old man disease, the OMD. And Jordy Mercer was recalled because of that. And Jordy Mercer, I'm sorry, go ahead.
This is nonsense. I was going to say, doesn't Jordy Mercer sound like a name from like the like 20s?
Oh, it does. It's one of those names like Tuffy Goosewidge. One of those good, and now coming to the plate, Jordy Mercer.
Sounds like, or it's like a gangster should be like, yeah, Jordy Mercer.
Yeah, see, Jordy Mercer, see?
I almost think in a Frank Sinatra song, he references someone named Jordy Mercer.
We'll Google that. We'll Google that. See if Frank Sinatra's referencing Jordy Mercer at all. But yeah, so he was recalled. Pirates fans like him because they think he's going to be the heir apparent at shortstop for Clint Barmas. I don't know whether Mercer has the skills that you would traditionally want in a shortstop. I don't think, you know, as much as I kind of pile it on Clint Barmas, he does play a great defense at shortstop, if nothing else. So, but Jordy Mercer has a lot of pop. He's more fun to watch at the plate than a Clint Barmas, so Pirates fans are kind of excited about that. Russell Martin, he continues to play exceptional defense, along with providing a solid bat. As of right now, he's throwing out about 40% of base runners that are stealing against him, which, if you are a fan of the Pirates at all and watched them last season, you know that was something that didn't happen a whole lot.
Who were they playing the other night, though? It was when A.J. Burnett was pitching, and the other team stole, I think, 6 bases off them.
Yeah, that was against the Brewers, and Michael McHenry was behind the plate for that. He was part of the stolen base problem last year. And that's just one of the weaknesses of his game, is he's not a great defensive catcher. So there was actually...
Go ahead.
There was actually I think it was Norichika Aoki, he was on first base, stole second base on a pitch out, and Michael McHenry sailed the ball into the outfield.
That's always good.
They had one of our minor league coaches is former major league catcher Tom Prince, and he worked with Wyatt Matheson last season, and from what I read, Prince came up to kind of talk with McHenry and kind of go over some things. Along with our regular staff coaches, you know, that we have with us all the time. So, you know, it's something they're working with Michael McHenry on. To me, McHenry's a great bat. It's awesome when you can get his bat in the lineup, but it's tough when teams know that they can steal.
So you see that as a McHenry problem, nothing to do with AJ Burnett.
No, I mean, Burnett doesn't help out his catchers because he has his delivery and he's not slide stepping to kind of give the catchers extra time.
Right.
But just watching Mike McHenry, I mean, they were some pretty awful throws. And you could tell McHenry was kind of frustrated with himself quite a bit.
So basically, McHenry's not a good defensive catcher, and teaming him with Burnett is just a recipe for trouble.
Yeah, you're kind of asking for stolen bases at that point. Yeah. So that's just kind of something to keep an eye on. Like I said, I love McHenry's bat. He's got a great stick, but... You're definitely giving up something when you're taking Gold Glover Russell Martin out from behind home plate and sticking McHenry there. I think, and this was yesterday, I heard on the broadcast, they said that Russell Martin has already thrown out a league leading amount of base runners this season. So as of yesterday, he was leading the league in base runners caught stealing.
What about your boy Francisco Liriano?
Oh, Francisco Liriano. He's had 2 strong outings. Francisco Liriano, to me, he's like that girlfriend that just keeps on breaking your heart, but you keep going back to her and you don't know why. That's like Francisco Liriano. He's probably going to have like another awesome 1 or 2 outings where he's striking out tons of batters and he's giving you exciting innings. And then he'll just go out and completely collapse. His command will be gone. He'll leave his fastball right down the middle of the plate. But he said so far that after his last outing, his arm felt great. His slider looks sharp. If you're watching him pitch, everything looks crisp. You know, it doesn't seem like he's having any ill effects from breaking his arm, bashing on his kid's door, or whatever it was. So that's kind of good to see. You look at Liriano, and Liriano is one of those kind of like Jonathan Sanchez type players, where You sign Jonathan Sanchez because you've seen what he's capable of. And Jonathan Sanchez has electric stuff. If he's able to harness it, he's thrown a no-hitter in his career.
Right.
And it's not like it was a luck no-hitter. I'd have to go look at it, but, you know, he strikes out a ton of batters because his stuff is phenomenal. Liriano's the same way.
Yeah.
You know, his stuff is amazing. No one's ever doubted his slider, but it's just getting him to be able to harness it and do it consistently. So he'll be a lot of fun to watch for the time that he's up and until his command leaves him, which hopefully won't be anytime soon.
I wouldn't count on it.
Yeah.
To your point, in 2011, he threw that no-hitter. And the next game, he only lasted 3 innings and gave up 4 runs.
Was that Liriano or Sanchez's no-hitter?
Liriano.
Liriano's no-hitter? Yeah. Yeah.
He goes up and down. Like, if you look at his game logs, it's all, you know, 7 innings, 3 hits, 8 hits over 3 1/3 inning, you know, the next time out. It's all, nothing's consistent with him.
Right. And even in his first game that he threw this season, he was still giving up. I think he gave up like 6 hits across 5 or 6 innings. And, you know, they were all singles, but there were still, you know, guys on base all the time. You know, he's not, and let me have it. Let's see here. Yeah. He's thrown 11 innings this year. He's surrendered 12 hits. He's walked 5, you know, his whip on the year is 1.5. So, you know, there's probably a lot of luck involved and, you know, it's a lot of him working with runners on base and out of the stretch. And if you watch enough baseball, you know, that's a recipe that doesn't promote a whole lot of success. So, but you know, like I said, electric stuff, he's a great buy low wild card type pitcher. So, Justin Wilson, we've had one of the most taxed bullpens in the major leagues. We've thrown more innings than just about every other bullpen. I think we may have the most innings thrown by our bullpen this season so far to this point. But Justin Wilson on Thursday gave the bullpen a well-needed break. Hurdle had already said that Jason Greely would be inactive because he pitched the previous 2 games, and he's trying to avoid pitching Greely as well as, and I believe Mark Melanson as well is kind of on that same schedule where if they're throwing 2 games, they're not going to be available for the next night game. So he brought in the lefty Justin Wilson against a righty, Aramis Ramirez. That was his welcome into the game. And Wilson did a great job. He did a great job filling in, stepping up. You know, that it's nice to see our bullpen because the back end of our bullpen's great. You know, Melanson and Greely have been awesome so far this season. But guys like Justin Wilson, Genmar Gomez, you know, they've really stepped up. And Gomez now is actually in a starting pitching role. But when we needed him out of the bullpen, he was there for us to kind of take those innings from those awful Jonathan Sanchez starts. And
he'll break your heart, don't worry.
Yeah. Oh, hey, listen. Yeah. I talk to a lot of Tribe fans. You know, you're an Indians fan. I get to hear you talk about Gomez all the time. But for right now, he's been awesome for us, so we're gonna keep riding it.
Yeah, you might as well. Just have the hook ready. Make sure Clint Hurdle's got the hook.
We got the old vaudeville cane ready to pull him off the stage there at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
And then looking at today, so today's Sunday, May 19th. We just had Jeff Locke. He threw an absolute gem for the Pirates today. That's another one of those things that you really, really like to see as a Pirates fan, some of these younger guys coming up and pitching well for us. Locke threw 7 innings today. He surrendered 3 hits and 2 walks. He only struck out 4, but no earned runs over the course of that start. His ERA on the season is 2.73. So you can't really be, you know, like Jeff Locke is coming up, and I think he's pitching to his potential or, you know, even probably above his potential so far this season across 9 games and 52 2/3 innings. You know, he's been great. He's doing a great job of managing the game. You know, he's got a 1.16 whip. So he's, you know, he's being efficient with his pitches. You know, it's as a Pirates fan, it's nice to see that. We kind of had a run, I guess prior to the Neil Huntington era, where we had guys like Tom Gorzolani, you know, Paul Mahalam, who were coming up and kind of doing the same thing. But they never had the type of offense that these guys have. So, you know, our offense isn't phenomenal, but we have impact bats in there now, like Andrew McCutchen and Pedro Alvarez, who are able to put some runs on the board and help us, you know, kind of get over those humps in those games. So, you know, I guess as a Pirates fan, again, we're just kind of hoping that Jeff Locke can keep that up and keep throwing well for the Pirates.
At least until you have some other options arrive, like Charlie Morton or Jeff Parsons.
Right, Jeff Parsons coming off the DL, or, you know, even Garrett Cole coming up later this season. You know, we just need these guys to be able to
throw that in there.
Got to. Oh, we got to. And actually, Garrett Cole, it's tough for me to talk today because he had a rough outing today. He started out really strong today, but in the fourth inning, the wheels fell off. He ended up his final line today. He threw 5 2/3 innings. He surrendered 8 earned runs, 3 walks. Yeah, only 4 strikeouts. This kind of seems to be this is a tough one for me to say as well, but it kind of seems to be a trend with Garrett Cole, where, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago with that 30 pitch rule the Pirates have in their farm system. Garrett Cole's already fell victim to that rule once this season, and there was another time that he fell victim to it in the first inning, but they kind of stretched the limitation of their rule, I guess, and said, well, it's only the first inning. We still got to get you some work out there. So I don't know. I think this kind of reaffirms what Neil Huntington has done, which is, you know, Garrett Cole needs stuff to work on. When that lineup turned over today, that was when he started to have problems. And it's clear, I didn't get to watch the start today, but it's, that just shows there's things that he needs to work on. So that's kind of a tough one to see, because he's one of those guys, again, you're expecting to see him in June, and when you see him go out and have an outing like that, it kind of really makes you wonder,
right,
is he going to be able to handle the load when he comes up? So I'll probably go back and watch that start and see kind of what happened around the fourth inning, but you know, you can probably assume safely it's probably some command issues. So I guess we'll see.
I mean, this is a discussion for a different time, but I don't know how I feel about that 30 pitch rule.
Yeah, I definitely, we can get on a soapbox on that. I was actually talking about it today with some of my other friends, and there's positives. Yeah, well, one other friend.
Okay, that sounds more like it.
I'm trying not to scare him away.
Don't talk too much baseball then.
Well, see, that's the thing. Yeah, no
one
really cares
about it. Don't get too Garrett Cole up on it.
They don't care about minor league pitch counts in the real world. I don't know. My girlfriend seems to like it, though. She loves hearing about minor league pitch counts.
Keep telling yourself that, Andy.
Yeah. I think there's pluses and minuses. You know, one of the things and to me, it doesn't seem like they're trying to manage a pitch count to keep his arm healthy. To me, it seems more like they're trying to teach him, hey, you have to be efficient with your pitches. It's not just, hey, he's thrown 30 pitches, we should take him out, it's going to hurt his shoulder or whatever. I think more of it is like, if you come to the major leagues and you have innings where you throw pitches like this, you're going to get crushed. So you need to learn to be more effective with your pitches, figure out how to get these outs early. I don't know.
Yeah, I see your point. I'm not sure that's the best way to teach a young pitcher that, but I think it's a valid lesson they need to learn, but it's a discussion for a different...
Yeah, we'll soapbox it one of these weeks coming up. And then the last point that I wanted to touch on the Pirates, Jared Hughes was recalled after Jose Contreras was placed on the bereavement list. Hughes was optioned to Indianapolis. He threw 6 scoreless. He had 6 scoreless outings while he was down there. He said that he made some mechanical adjustments, and he feels his sinker and slider are back to where they were last season, which, if you're a Pirates fan, that's great news because he was phenomenal last season. So just kind of worth keeping your eye on Jared Hughes since he's back in our bullpen. And last year we deployed him, and he was very effective in his outings for the Pirates. So, well, that's it for Pittsburgh. Let's move on to Cleveland. What's going on in Cleveland, Jason?
Well, out in Cleveland, the Tribe's off to another hot start. Now they've righted the ship after going 11-13 before the month of May, going 13-4 so far in the month of May, rattling off a hot streak. So they're 24-17, right? Well, actually 25-17 because they won this afternoon. Winners of, well, now it would be 17 of their last 21. So This is the third consecutive season they've been off to a hot start. But the thing, you know, when you look at it is this team, they're not – they're probably playing maybe, you know, Mark Reynolds isn't going to continue to hit a home run every 11 at-bats as he, I think, went 0-3 today with three strikeouts. That's kind of – that adjustment is coming. But, you know, you look at this team and it's like, is Nick Swisher overperforming? No. Is Asdrubal Cabrera overperforming? No, he's probably underperforming. Carlos Santana's in a cold streak now after a hot streak. Michael Brantley's kind of good games and bad. You know, it's like, you think Michael Bourne's overperforming? No. So the offense looks like they can continue this pace. The question, of course, is the pitching staff. Justin Masterson has put up two really good starts. He put up a great one Monday in the first game of the Yankees doubleheader where he went a full game, complete game shutout with four hits against the Yankees. And then today against the Mariners, he went seven innings, no runs and three hits with 11 strikeouts. And he had nine against the Yankees. So Masterson, you know, it's kind of, is he overperforming? It's hard to say anymore. You know, he rattles off these games and you kind of hope this is the Masterson he's going to become. And if he can continue that and Zach McAllister can continue pitching and cross your fingers, cross your heart, do a dance for good luck, Ubaldo Jimenez keeps pitching the way he has been. you know, then you can live with a guy like Corey Kluber who will give you a good one and a clunker. And, you know, I mean, really, he's your eighth starter, you know. And Scott Kazmir, he's pitching pretty well. There's even some scuttlebutt, I guess you'd say, that around the All-Star break, the Indians are going to do some more roster maneuvering to get Carlos Carrasco back up. Clear up that suspension, and then, you know, if a Brett Myers or a Kazmir or whatever falters, he can become an option again. But, you know, watching MLB Network the other night, Harold Reynolds, his comment on the Indians was, yeah, they're playing as good as they can play and they're still not in first place. Well, but they've gone 13-4 in this month after a really bad start. You know, are they going to continue 13-4? No. But I think it's one of those things. They just need to hang around 500. And then the front office can look to whether it's add another bat or add another arm, you know, whatever this team needs. And Jason Kipnis has really, really started to stroke the ball.
I was just about to ask who you thought the hottest hitter in baseball has been over the last week.
I'm going to guess Jason Kipnis.
You'd be correct. He's hitting over last week. He's 9-24, 3 home runs, 10 RBI, 2 stolen bases. That's one of the dynamics that I found to be interesting too. As someone who, you know, I watched the Indians farm system, but probably not as closely as you. But Kipnis wasn't a huge base stealer coming up, but since he's reached the majors, he's really used his legs to his advantage.
Yeah, he's really taken off, pun intended, as a base stealer. In his first 70 at-bats, he was hitting 200 with a 286 slugging. And in his last 61 at-bats, he's hitting 295 with a 738 slugging. And, you know, he had that great walk-off three-run homer Friday night. And he's just continued from that point. You know, I've heard someone say that this last 60 at bats here where Kipnis has really turned it on and the Indians have become that much more successful just shows that Kipnis is kind of the key cog in that Indians offense, you know. And Terry Francona flipped him with his Asdrubal Cabrera. He had Cabrera batting second and Kipnis batting third, and after he flipped them, both have come alive. Cabrera is hitting over 300 since that point. He really hasn't shown the power we know he's capable of, but Jason Kipnis has really, you know, completely come alive. So that'll be something interesting to keep watching. The one One thing kind of going the other direction is that Lonnie Chisenhall was sent to AAA last week. And this is a guy that really gets compared with Jason Kipnis a lot because of their similar age and similar prospect standing. But he's really struggled this year. And one of the things I look at, you know, a lot of people are heaping a lot of criticism on Lonnie Chisenhall because of his strikeout to walk rate, which is something he's always struggled with. But, you know, he came out of spring, everyone saying he's going to be the regular third baseman. And then, partially not his fault, Mark Reynolds goes on an absolute tear. And all of a sudden it's like, well, we got to find a place for Mark Reynolds to play every day. And we still got to find a place for Mike Avilas to play. And so by the time you get through it, when Lonnie Chisenhall got optioned down at like 35 games into the season, I think he only had 68 plate appearances or something like that. 99 plate appearances. You know, that's not a huge sample size, even though I know, you know, we're approaching where we at now, the 40 game mark, but he was sent down before that. I don't know. Some people are really concerned about Lonnie Chisenhall. And I'm not sure. He's had very limited looks so far at the major league level.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that because I've been hearing a lot of people talk about Lonnie Chisenhall and Matt LaPorta in the same sentence, do you think those are is it a fair to lump Lonnie in there with Matt LaPorta yet?
Well, there is a similarity in that they both really struggle with the strikeout to walk ratio. They both struggle with plate discipline. The thing with Lonnie Chisenhall that to me is different, for one, Lonnie Chisenhall now only about 600 plate appearances into his major league career, I think, and he's only 24. Matt LaPorta has had over 1,000 plate appearances in the majors and is 27. So that's a huge difference. One, that'd be my first point. Two, Lonnie Chisenhall has a much shorter swing than Matt LaPorta. And although it was getting long and was a reason to send him back to AAA to try to shorten that down and get back to that kind of classic left-hander sweet swing scouts talk about, he doesn't have the swing of Matt LaPorta. He doesn't have the I get fooled by every curveball I've ever seen in my life come from a major league pitcher kind of swing. So I guess, you know, there's similarities, and I guess Lonnie Chisenhall might be heading down that road. But at this point in his career, 24 years old with parts of 3 seasons, I'm not ready to say he's Matt LaPorta, a guy who's 27 and had 1,000 plate appearances in the major leagues. We'll see how he adjusts at AAA. You know, that's going to be the real trick is, does he handle that demotion well? Does he go back to what we saw in spring training where he had that sweet short swing and was hitting 400? Or does he go back to what we've seen now where thus far in the season he's hitting 213 with 3 homers, 11 RBIs, 3 walks, and 22 strikeouts? You know, Matt LaPorta's highest average, I believe, in his career was 258. Lonnie Chisenhall has already beat that. His first season, he beat that. So I think it's, you don't want to get too crazy comparing them, but if he doesn't make the correction, yeah, he could end up there. And as far as the whole Mark Reynolds thing, you know, it's questionable how Mark Reynolds' value is affected by making him the everyday third baseman. I saw Mark Reynolds play third base at Jacobs Field or Progressive Field a couple years ago, right on the third base side, only a couple rows up when he was with the Orioles. It was a pretty ugly spectacle. I've seen him play third base on TV this year, and he's made some pretty good plays. He's booted a couple too, but he's looked much better so far this year. But I think it'd be interesting to see when he's playing over there more. Does that expose him as a worse third baseman, or is he going to actually get better having more reps at third base? And the same with Avilas, you know. Is Avilas the kind of guy, I was just curious. He's only had, I think, 69 plate appearances so far this year. Is Avilas the kind of guy whose value is hurt by having to play more after a demotion to Lonnie Chisenhall? Or is he the kind of guy you want to pick your spots, you know? Like, he played today against Felix Hernandez. His lifetime average against Felix Hernandez was 400. And he went 2 for 4 with a double and a run scored. You know, it's like you put him in that spot and you don't expose him when he shouldn't be out there. He can be a great player. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with Lonnie Chisenhall, how long he's in the minors, and how he adjusts to the things they're asking him. As far as the minors, TJ House, who's a recently promoted starting pitcher, he was just sent up to AAA, and he's really starting to stabilize there. He had a nice outing the other night where he went 6 1/3 and only gave up one run. Dorsis Paulino, who got off to a really, really rough start for the number two prospect in your system in Lake County, he's beginning to find some success there, so hopefully that continues. Tyler Naquin, night after night after night, just shows why he has at least 4, if not 5 tools. He keeps hitting. He keeps stealing bases. He keeps showing off his defense. The only thing really that's questionable is how much power does he have, but he's hitting doubles, and if he can keep showing he can play center field, he doesn't need to flash a lot of power. And Chun Chen, who was the former catcher, former first baseman, current designated hitter for the Akron Arrows, was promoted to Columbus today, which is a well-deserved promotion. This is his third time at Akron. His first year, he showed a lot of power, had 16 home runs. Last year, he had almost no power, only 5 home runs. And so far this year, he's already passed that with 6 home runs and a .324 average, .427 on base, and a over .500 slugging. So it'll be interesting to see if he can keep that up at Columbus, because DH is a spot where down the road, if you're not going to bring Lonnie Chisenhall back and you're going to tell Mark Reynolds he's going to play third, DH is a spot they could use another bat, whether it's from the minors or whether it's in a trade later in the season. One thing I want to talk about is Tony Wolters. We talked earlier in the year about him being moved to catcher, which, of course, Andy, you as a former catcher were kind of skeptical about moving a guy who was at least in the top 10 of your prospects in your system from second base to catcher.
Yeah.
Apparently, some more information's come out about that. It was actually Terry Francona's idea, because he commented that after watching Wolters play second and short in some spring training games, that Wolters' body type, his hands, the way he fielded the ball reminded him of Alex Avila for the Tigers, who is, of course, their catcher. And he got the idea, you know, well, didn't that kid catch in high school? Maybe that's interesting, you know. And he brought it up at a meeting at the end of spring training. And Ross Atkins, the Indians farm director, just kind of said, well, you know, if the kid's up for it, maybe we should, because we've got so many middle infield prospects. So it was Tony Wolters' decision. They told him about it, gave him a night to think about it, and he was all right with it. And he said it's going well. He's having a lot of fun. He has just left extended spring training and is getting ready to join High A Carolina to actually start catching in games. So we'll see how that goes when he's actually catching in the game. He was at a catching clinic at Progressive Field the other day with Sandy Alomar Jr. and the bullpen coach, former catcher Kevin Cash. So that'll be one to follow this whole year, see how Tony Wolters adjusts as a catcher, and see the Indians have some very young catching prospects, but none that really jump to the front of the line. So if he can make that transition, I think it would be easy for him to become the best catching prospect in the Indian system, outside of Yan Gomes, who I don't really consider a prospect anymore.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other discussion, whether Jan Gomes should be on this team as opposed to Lou Marson. It'll be interesting to see how the Tribe handles that. I mean, Jan Gomes has done nothing to show that he can't defensively handle catching. His bat has been spotty, but he's shown a lot of power, and when you only get to play every fifth day or whatever, you know, it's tough to be consistent, especially as a young player with your bat. So I think a lot of it depends on how Lou Marson recovers. You know, does he return to that elite defensive catcher that you want as your backup, or is he that kind of just meh player he was for most of last year and the beginning of this year? Because if that's what you're going to get from Lou Marson, there's no reason to have him on the team.
Right, yeah. You might as well get that Jan Gomes, and with that upside with his bat especially.
Right, and then, you know, you can let Jan Gomes get some DH at bats, and maybe he can find a groove if he can get some more consistent at bats.
Exactly. Well, that's going to wrap it up for the Tribe today. Thanks for the updates with that, Jason. Quickly, we want to touch on the Erie Seawolves here. Specifically, I want to touch on James McCann because he's been a prospect to really keep an eye on for the Seawolves. McCann went into the series against the Bowie Bay Sox on the 10th of May. He had a huge three-hit night for the Seawolves that night. And then again on the 13th, against the Reading Fighting Phils, he had a huge eighth inning where he drove a ball into right field in the eighth with the bases loaded to give the Seawolves a 5-4 lead. Over his last 10 games, James McCann is hitting .400. He's had 35 at-bats. No home runs over that period of time, but you know, he's driven in 6 runs. He scored 5 runs himself, hit 5 doubles. His OPS, just to kind of give you an idea, his on base is .447. His slugging over that period of time is .543, which gives him an OPS of 990 over that period of time. So James McCann's been one of the hotter bats for the Erie Seawolves over the last 10 games or so. So it's nice to see that he's doing well. Tomorrow, the Erie Seawolves start a series against the Harrisburg Senators. So I'm sure we'll be in contact with our buddy Mick, who keeps a very close eye on the Senators. Tomorrow's Buck Night at Geriot. So if you get a chance, get out there and go enjoy options that the Seawolves have for a dollar. Last day, we want to wrap up with some of our tweet mails. We've had a couple tweets, couple Facebook questions, so we want to catch up with some of the tweet mails.
Tweet mails.
Well, it sounds like our first tweet's going to be going to Jason. Jason, this is a question from Dave in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Carlisle, PA, one of our big email locales.
That's right.
Dave wants to know, should the Cleveland Indians lock up Mark Reynolds with a long-term deal? So what do you think about that, Jason?
Well, you know, I think it's something to really consider. You know, he was signed to a one-year, $6 million contract this offseason. I believe he's had 3 consecutive one-year contracts. Not sure. One might have been a 2-year contract from the Orioles, but he's been getting a lot of very short-term contracts. The thing to keep in mind, especially if Reynolds keeps hitting the way he has, teams are going to pay for that power. So if he finishes the year with 35 home runs, even if he is hitting .240 or .250, you're not going to be able to sign him for 3 years and $25 million, or even probably 3 years, $30 million. Now, he'll qualify for the draft pick compensation, you know, where if they make a qualifying offer, they'll get a draft pick. I think it would be really in their best interest to do that, although that qualifying contract is probably going to be like $13 million.
Yeah.
But that's, again, it's another opportunity for them to use that to their advantage. Nobody's going to want to pay Mark Reynolds over $13 million a season. So if you attach that, and they don't want to give up a first-round pick for him either. So if you attach all that to him, maybe you can scare him into signing a 3 or 4 year deal with the Indians, you know, especially he seems to be enjoying the atmosphere, enjoying the success of the team and having Tito as his manager. It's going to be expensive. You know, it's probably going to be $50 million to sign him to a long-term deal. But when you look at this team and you've got Swisher long-term, Bourne long-term, Brantley still in arbitration, another year of Cabrera, Kipnis and Santana still in arbitration, maybe that's what you need to do. You know, maybe that's, this is your new window and you need to lock it down. He's not a guy who's going to hit for average, but he's going to give you that right-handed power that the Indians really have not had since Manny Ramirez.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he definitely adds a different dynamic to the lineup, especially there's so many switch hitters in the lineup, but it really is still a lefty-heavy lineup when you look at it. All the solid players that don't switch hit are lefties, like Bourne, Brantley. You know, the only real consistent at-bats from the right side are Avilas and Reynolds. So
Jason, let me ask you, final verdict. Would you, as the Cleveland Indians general manager, lock up Mark Reynolds to a long-term deal?
I would, you know, and I think part of it is to build some goodwill with the fan base to show, you know, that you're investing in this team. You think this is the team you're going to get over the hump with, basically, you know. So I think you do. You sign him, you sign Justin Masterson, you sign Kipnis, you sign Santana, and you lock it down and you try to fill in what you don't have.
All right, final verdict from Jason. Lock up Mark Reynolds.
That's right.
So, Mark Shapiro, if you're listening, get him locked up. We had two questions on Facebook, one of which really kind of makes me laugh. We'll get to the first one we'll get to the more serious one before we get to the more amusing one. These questions are from Andy Nesbitt. We know he's a frequent listener. Thanks for dropping us some questions there, Andy. His first question that he had was, with Starling Marte's outstanding arm, why isn't he playing right field? And I feel like I can kind of address this. Feel free to chime in if you guys want. But if you're familiar with PNC Park at all, you know the biggest part of the park is that gap in left center, where you have, it's kind of like where the center field wall and the left field wall kind of meet and form an angle there. And it ends up tending to be the deepest part of the ballpark there. So you want a player who can cover more ground, which one of Marte's outstanding skills is his speed. You know, he does have a phenomenal arm, which lends itself to balls that are hit out into that gap. And, you know, it's not like you can have outfielders that in left field that have strong arms. I think it's more of a benefit if you have a strong arm in left field. You know, maybe you'll end up piling up some more assists from the outfield or whatever. But
yeah, I would agree with that.
You know, from my point, it seems like they would want Marte out there to cover more of that ground in left center. You think about it, where more balls going to be hit? Well, you're going to traditionally have more balls hit in that left center power alley. So I would assume that's why Marte's out there. That might be something for me to do a little digging around and see if there's any other reason.
And I think, too, it's like how the Indians have Michael Brantley in left field and Drew Stubbs in right. The high wall in left field actually makes Michael Brantley's arm better, because a line drive off the wall will ricochet back to him, and he can make a strong throw to second base. And I've seen him get two or three runners this year. Whereas there's more space in right field, it's a longer throw, so you put Drew Stubbs there, and he actually has a better chance to throw someone out at home and to cover that ground. Take it a step further, you got a staff full of sinker ballers, right-handed sinker ballers. So you're going to get a lot of kind of flare shots, you know, to right field. I'm not familiar enough to think about what the Pirates pitching staff would produce a lot of, but you got to take that into consideration as well.
Well, when James McDonald's in there, it produces a lot of home runs.
Well, so. I'm aware of that, but not the ones who are successful.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't pile that on James McDonald.
He's not kicking
a man while he's down. The second question, Dr. Garrett, maybe you can chime in on this one. Andy asked us, why is Travis Snyder's face so red?
Sure. Actually, not that unreasonable of a question. Just real quickly, it has to do with the regulation of blood vessels, and generally, the waste products produced by organs cause blood vessels to constrict or dilate based on the needs of the organ. And one of the products produced by physical exertion is heat. So heat will cause vasodilation of the blood vessels at the skin. If you think of it like a car, the skin is the radiator. This is where you get rid of your heat. And so as the season, you know, in Pittsburgh, it's warming up, it's getting more humid, these players are having a harder time cooling their internal temperature, more blood is taken to the surface to get rid of some of this heat.
Listen to that. That was such a serious answer. I respond with either because he's an alcoholic or he's just grossly out of shape. That was my analysis for
not
why
on
Travis
this
Snyder's
podcast,
face is red.
Man.
We'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
Well, thanks for chiming in with that, Dr. Garrett. Glad we had you here to really address that. Now you guys all know.
Keep them coming.
Yeah, the more you know, the more you know. Knowledge is power. Well, that's going to wrap up today's show. We'd like to again thank our listeners. Thanks for the emails, for the tweet mails. We appreciated that this week. We would kindly ask, again, if you're listening to us on iTunes, that you give us a rate and review. Those rate and reviews drive our popularity up and help us get more listeners, which we would love to have. If you want to check us out on the web, you can at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter, @tristatebb. And you can check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So for Jason Ruggiero and Dr. Garrett Britton, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to seeing you next week.